What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is Pucks and Seven with Ryan Payton and Victoria Matiash.
So I'm going to introduce us in a different way. Not introduce us, but introduce the show in a different way. Don't think I've done this before.
Go on, then.
Thank you. So last night, Edmonton won 4-3 in game one over Florida in overtime. Almost went to double OT. We'll break down the game and a whole bunch of things in between and other off-ice news, too, on this edition of Pucks and Seven in a second. But I want people to remember the number 4 and the number 3. And that score, 4-3. Even though I have the Panthers in 6, if the series goes 7, which after last night, hopefully it will, because that was amazing, it'll end 4-3.
Hockey game.
It'll end 4-3. That's all I'm saying. Keep the number in mind. Keep the separate numbers in mind. What a game that was. Welcome to the show. Ryan Payton, Victoria Matiash, brought to you by Rogue Sports and Media. I will talk Nikita Kucherov. Also, before the Stanley Cup final began, game one, Gary Bettman addressed the media at the State of the Union. We'll talk CBA, the Hawkeye technology, not the Chicago Blackhawks thing, Vic, as we talked about. Yes, but that's okay.
We'll discuss that text too quickly.
What's this Hawks thing?
What are we talking about the Blackhawks
for? Love it. We'll also talk about the new coaches in Boston and Pittsburgh. One is a name. The other is who? We'll talk about that in a second. But let's begin again with last night, game one, Vic. It was unreal. Almost went to double overtime. Mm-hmm. So much happened in the three periods in regulation. A lot happened in that overtime frame, almost 20 full minutes. And at the end of it, give credit where credit's due. Heck of a game. Edmonton found a way to come back, and they found a way to strike first.
It was interesting in so many ways. There's so many storylines to address here, right? The fact, but I think the biggest one that we have to address right off the top, the Florida Panthers, 10-0 this postseason when leading in the third.
Yeah.
That didn't happen last night.
Yeah.
Under Paul Maurice, 31-0.
Yeah.
This just tells us, or shows us rather, the mm-hmm. Oilers just are showing us now that they are a slightly improved version over last year's team.
Sure.
Which was still pretty damn good and took the Florida Panthers to a game 7 and they lost by a goal.
Yeah, they were a goal away like Florida
was. This was a game the Oilers were supposed to lose. They were supposed to lose this game. Florida was up 3-1 and then 3-2, obviously, until it was tied up. That's the way that the math works. But in general, this was a game that the Oilers were supposed to lose, and they didn't. And there's reasons why they didn't lose that game, and a delay of game penalty obviously came into play. We'll get into that in a little bit.
But just a formidable response
after being done. You just don't beat the Florida Panthers in the postseason when you are down 3-1 in the second period, and they did.
And in the second, this was a tale of two periods as well, in the second and the third. And in the second, I believe the shots favored Florida 17-8. So Stuart Skinner was great. But then
he was chef's kiss in the second period.
But then in the third, Florida was outshot 14-2. And I did the math, and you combine the 14-2 in the third and the shots on goal both teams had in, again, almost a full 20 minutes of overtime, the total after the third and after OT was 24-8 in favor of Edmonton. So just based on that alone, Vic, there's no reason to think Edmonton should not have won this game. But again, Paul Maurice said after the game, it was an overtime goal. It could have gone either way. Other storylines too coming out of that. Bobrovsky played very well. I thought, well, at least one goal he was a bit shaky on. You thought differently?
Yes. I thought one was. He faced 46 shots. What are you going to want from a guy? And he stopped a whole bunch of them. There's probably one he wants back, but the rest of them, I think, were pretty legit.
Skinner played well, and a lot of the talk going in was Stuart Skinner, and how is he going to be? Is he going to be the 800 save percentage guy or somebody who faces a ton of shots, makes a bunch of saves? So he was great. The final goal, before we set up the delay of game penalty, that led to that. But I've watched that game-winning goal over and over and over again.
Hey there, Corey Perry.
Ryan Nugent-Hopkins along the near wall. Gets it to Perry.
Yes.
Quick little pass McDavid. A beautiful saucer to Draisaitl, right? And then if you look at the camera, I'm all about the camera angles. I don't know why I'm more so in this day and age of hockey, but there's so many different camera angles that you can see. So if you watch different replays, there was one replay of somebody, guess the camera guy or woman, in the first row, right, of the stands through that through that little the hole in the glass. And it had Draisaitl scoring, raising the hands, coming toward him or her. But in the background, you see McDavid, the first thing he does is he turns around
to Perry.
And you see Corey Perry behind him. He points to Corey Perry. And I thought that's what that was. That Vic was an absolutely beautiful goal.
The no look.
Yeah.
Plus the gorgeous pass from McDavid to Draisaitl. Plus a perfect shot, essentially.
Yep.
Again, maybe Bob would like a second chance at, but really a pretty gorgeous shot.
I don't know, to be honest. Was, I don't know many. I don't know many goalies that would have stopped that shot.
It was under his arm, so I think maybe he was had a little bit better luck. And I know he was in tight, Ryan. I know. But just, I wonder if you asked Bob if he would like to face it again. I think he would.
Of course
say
he
yes.
would. Of course he would.
But it was still a very, very pretty goal. It was a very pretty setup. I was a little grateful, no horse in this race, that we weren't going to double overtime because I'm already going to lose a lot of sleep this postseason.
Right. It was close.
I'm like, oh no, somebody get this resolved. I still would have rather it not be on a power play where the penalty was earned in a questionable manner.
Yeah, do you want to talk about that? Sure.
One last point. One last point first.
Oh yeah.
We talked before this series that the secret to the Oilers' success, their star players had to be effective, which they were.
Yep.
But they also needed contributions from the supporting cast.
Mm-hmm.
I present to you Arvidsson and Podkolzin. Because without them getting the Oilers back in the game, we're not talking about no Draisaitl and OT winner.
No, we're not.
So they played their part as well. I thought Kasperi Kapanen was very effective in this game.
He was.
There were other contributors. I mean, what can we say about Matthias Ekholm at this point?
Yeah.
Right? He's had one game warm-up and he looks like he's been playing the entire postseason. He is their best all-around defender. So it's not just the Draisaitl McDavid show, and it can't be. That's my point.
Yeah, depth was a huge story going in because the amount of goal scores on Florida compared to the ones with Edmonton, pretty much identical. I think they were 19 apiece, something like that. And you're right, you need, and we talked about this at length, and we'll probably do it through the rest of the series. It's the lines three, lines four, that third set of defensemen, the PK, the blocking of the shots. Yes,
absolutely.
You can have some of the greatest players in the world playing on each team, which a lot of them are. But at the end of it, it's the guys who put in those really hard. I'm not saying McDavid and Leon and Barkov don't do hard minutes. They
but
you know
they're not playing 40 minutes a game.
That's right. Exactly.
There's going to be a lot of time when they're not on the ice and you need the other players to contribute. Go ahead.
Two things. The Bennett goal, it was challenged. Where do you stand on that?
I think it was not a great coach's challenge. And I didn't, that's
agreed.
Not hindsight. At the time, I said, what are you doing?
Yep.
To the television set. What are you doing?
Did it say anything back to you? Well, Vic, I'm just in slow-mo right now.
Well, eventually, I think it was Wes McCauley who told me that, it's a good goal. It was a trip. Pushed. Yep. Did he make the most of the situation? Of course he did. Is he a hockey player? What are you going to ask him to do? But for Knobloch, I'm glad it didn't affect the outcome of the game because I don't like that.
Agreed.
But to point out, this postseason, Ryan, coaches' challenges for goals?
Yeah,
0
I know.
For, 0 for 4.
Yeah,
so maybe we want to take a really good hard look at these because guess what? Penalty given to the Oilers. Guess who scores on the power play? Right?
I know.
You have to be extra careful with that.
So
I thought it was the right call. You?
Yeah, I did too. Okay. I absolutely did. And you watched it initially. And plus, nobody would have been talking as much about it if it wasn't Bennett who was the one who was in the crease, right?
Such a poop disturber.
But he knows what to do. And you're right. When he was coming back and he got upended a tiny bit. Oh, I'm just going to keep my, I'm not going to try
why
to get away.
You?
Oh, why wouldn't you?
He was legitimately tripped.
He was.
How about it? He is going to get paid.
No, he is. He is. Let's talk about the delay of game penalty. And you and I addressed this just before we came on and how we don't want to see any game decided by that. Now, if Edmonton didn't score
world.
In the power play, then went to double OT and the Panthers won, even Edmonton won, then nobody would have said, okay, yeah, they got away with the penalty and the Panthers did the PK, everything was fine. But the fact is they were down a man and Edmonton scored. I'm just going to tell you about this whole puck over glass thing. It irritates the you-know-what out of me. I think it is the dumbest rule in the NHL. The problem is you can't change it because you can't word it differently because you just don't know what the person on the ice is thinking. Let me just read this to you.
I understand.
In ice hockey, a puck over glass penalty, also known as delay of game, is called when a player, while in their defensive zone, intentionally shoots or bats the puck directly, not deflected, over the glass and out of play. The key word is intentionally. I throw this to you. There is no, how many players in the league? 800, 700, something? Is that what
there's
it is?
About.
Whatever. There is more than five. You tell me that
I think it's nearing 900, but go probably. Ahead.
Nobody in the league is intentionally going to do that because they know that they will get penalized. And you watch what happened last night. There was time to clear the puck out of the zone. There was a tiny bit of pressure at the end, but there was no intention to do that. But right when that happens, and Chris Cuthbert had a great line, he was like, oh, 20,000 fans just told you there should be a penalty. Everyone raised their... I think it's a stupid penalty. But the problem is, you can't change the wording in it because the word intentional is, well, obviously, we don't think the players intentionally do it, but you can't say, oh, let's review that. You can't review inside someone's mind to get a clear picture. You can only review what you see. So I don't know.
I'm going to argue you. Ready?
Please do.
Because I know you agree with me on this. High sticking penalty. Are you responsible for your stick?
Yes, you're responsible
for your
stick.
So why are you not responsible for your stick when you're shooting the puck over the glass?
Yeah.
Why? You're still responsible for what you're doing. I think the intent in the intentional verbiage is more to address that if it doesn't go off another player, if it isn't deflected in some other manner. I think that's, it's poorly worded, Ryan. I'm going to totally give you that.
It's terribly
worded.
You don't know
what is in the player's brain. And nobody is doing this on purpose, because they know they're going to get the 2 minutes and then they're going to put their team in a rough spot. We should mention Tomas Nosek did. Yeah. Last night, yeah. And basically did cost his team the game. Side note, Nosek does this a lot. He's a repeat offender when it comes to the over the glass delay of game penalty. I'm just as a side note.
Yeah, I still don't like it.
I don't love it, but I don't know what the solution is. They brought the rule in because they didn't want players to shoot the puck over the glass so that everybody would get a break and you could reset, right?
Oh, yeah. No, and I get that, but there's nobody doing that intentionally. And even the high-sticking thing, I understand you're responsible for your stick, but so many high-sticking calls are completely accidental. You're going for
but
the
we still call
stick.
Them.
That's what I'm saying. I know. I know it's not going to change. I just don't like it because I know the intent – for the most part, especially with the pucker of the glass, it is nowhere near anyone's mind. Oh, anyway, I agree with you. Game two, who knows what's going to happen? We'll find out tomorrow.
Stuff.
Game
Stuff
two.
Stuff is going to happen.
Yeah, let's just not decide this thing on a penalty like that, please. So whatever you guys do.
Hey, we're on the same page with that.
I know. Okay, let's get to some off-ice news before we get some coaches. A new one's in Pittsburgh, new one in Boston. A familiar name, I guess, in Boston. Brock Nelson signing a contract in Colorado. Great deal for him. A great deal for the Avs. I kind of got the sense, too, at the end of the season and even the last number of days that this was going to happen, and it ended up happening.
I like it, too. So 3 years, 22 and a half mil, so 7.5 per season. I thought that was the logical number. Mm-hmm. I think we all talked about between 7 and 8 for him. Mm-hmm. He was coming off a deal where he made 6. Salary cap is going up. So he's essentially making the same amount of money. Why isn't he making more? Because he's 33 years old. Right. If he was 27, he would be making more. So Colorado is all in on this. We have our second line center for next year. And maybe he's a third line center thereafter because of what other pieces that might eventually come in. And that's why a 3-year deal. I'm a little bit surprised it wasn't 4 years just based on his age. I thought maybe his agent would fight and scrap for that extra. But maybe that would have been a 6.5 per as opposed to 7.5.
Right. And you know what? If you the 3 years, maybe it's an ideal one because the cap is going up.
There's that. That's a huge
each of the
too.
Next
good point.
Three. And then maybe, hey, in year four, let's just see where we're at in year four. And maybe we can get a bit more.
Yeah, he's going to be 36, though.
I know.
Hey, so but I like it. I like it for both of them.
So too is Brad Marchand. He's getting up the range as well. And he's going to cash in. He was interviewed and it was interesting by Elliot Friedman before the game, and one of the questions was, "Hey Brad, I know you know you're a UFA at the end of the season, and have you thought about this?" He's like, "Oh, I'll discuss it after the season's done,
yeah, I heard this.
And whatever." And then he the question was, "Hey, have you ever thought about playing in Canada?" And he said, "Everything's on the table." I firmly believe that he'll end up in Canada.
Do you?
I do. I really do. And now the question is, based on what he's doing, what is he? He's 37.
He's 37.
So, 51 points last season, 23 goals. I'm talking about last season as in not the playoffs, but the regular season. 6.13 mil. That was the contract. Word on what he's going to get. There's word on what Mitch Marner probably will get. What about Sam Bennett? He's going to get paid. And it's not only the teams or the players' agents that are going to go to these teams, and the team's going to go to their agents and say, "Hey, this is what we can offer you." It's number one, especially with Brad Marchand, for example. He doesn't want to go to a place where you're in a complete rebuild and growth phase. No, you want to go to a contending team still to end your career. I still firmly believe that he'll be the type of player, regardless of where he signs the next contract, he'll sign that one-day deal with Boston way down the road.
Of course he will.
And end his career.
Of
course
he will.
But anyway, the point is, the more that he just does this, then, I mean, what number, Vic, do we think that he's going to, like, is he going to get close to 8? Is it 7 point something like Nelson? Like, what is it?
He was a star in that game last night. And yeah. I know we're just talking about one particular game, but he was a game changer beyond the goal that he scored that, you know, got Florida really going. Beyond that, he does everything well. He's an agitator. He can still move. We're now hearing more and more about how great he is in the dressing room, which is not, that's going to earn you an extra mil. Because look at the presence that you bring, and you unite the team, and everybody plays a little bit better. Sure, it's an intangible. It doesn't matter. Intangibles get paid all the time.
Yeah.
How can you pay him 8?
Say it's a 3-year contract at 8. You're at 24. That seems pretty steep to me, even though what he still can bring to the table. I'm sure that he will be offered.
Sam Reinhart's getting 8.
I know. He'll be offered.
How can you give him Sam Reinhart?
Because some teams will. Some teams will, just like they're going to give Mitch Marner.
I saw
the other day 12.45, 12.5, 13 point this, 14 point something.
I've heard 14 thrown around.
The number is astonishing, right? We had Emily Kaplan on this week, and she suggested Columbus. That I didn't hear about that before, but that's what she thinks. And the more you think about it, there's going to be teams that will throw money. The question will be to every single one of these free agents is, where do they want to go? Mm-hmm. Do they want to give up a little bit more money in order to maybe win closer to now than later?
What are the tax considerations state by state, province by province? That's going to come into play as well.
It's
not people dismiss it a little bit as a factor, but it's not. I know for certain it's not.
Yeah, no, it's a factor. It's a factor. Anyway,
how much does Bennett make?
I'm going to say 8.
He can't, again, I'm using.
I know. You go back. Just forget he's even playing. Let's just focus in on Bennett. Yeah, I know.
The Panthers metric is what I'm focusing on here.
I know.
To me, he can't make more than Sam Reinhart.
Yeah,
he scored a gajillion goals two years ago and scored a bunch last year too, by the way.
Yeah.
He can make more than Carter Verhaeghe, who I believe is making 7.
Right.
So you've got to tuck him in there. So I think the magic number is 8. I do.
Okay. Okay.
Now watch, he's going to get 11 and a half.
Imagine, right? Yeah, for 1 year. And then, no, I'm kidding. that'd be some contract. Okay, let's move on to some new coaches. So in Boston, Marco Stern is now with the Boston Bruins. I didn't know this. Well, I did know this. I had forgotten about it. I knew he played for Boston, and he played from 05 to 2010, but I forgot that he scored the overtime winning goal at the outdoor game in 2010 at Fenway.
I don't remember that either.
Yeah,
that's fascinating.
So I had to look at him like, oh yeah, you did score that. Anyway, he's taken on a team now, Vic, in Boston. Worst team in the last 20 years when it comes to the Bruins. They were terribly defensively. Goaltending was awful. They couldn't score. They traded Brad Marchand. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of turnover with this club. I think it's a good hire. I do. But I just want to see how Boston responds, because I really don't think, I know that there's going to be some changes with the team and how it's going to look in September and October, but I don't see Boston being as bad as they were last year going in now to this season.
Well, they have some transactions they need to make this offseason to improve themselves. I mean, I think we all realize that. What I do like about this, we should mention, it's he's not coming out of nowhere. He's been an assistant with the Los Angeles Kings for some time.
Yeah.
He's coached the German national team very successfully. He's enjoyed success with development teams and in different areas. So he's not just, you know, coming off the couch, so to speak.
Right.
He's bringing a hard-nosed approach, according to Boston management. Mm-hmm. I think that is the identity of that team. So I like that. What I do like about this, I think he's 46. Mm-hmm, just compared to you and I talk about this all the time, the coaching carousel, it's recycle, recycle, recycle. Yep. And it's going to be the same situation when we get to Pittsburgh in 2 seconds. Yep. But I like the fact that it's going to be a fresh voice, a fresh face. We get to see something a little bit different. So I like that. But again, you're right too. Boston needs to make the appropriate adjustments to the personnel, or it's not going to matter. No. Scotty Bowman in his prime could run this team. Yep. It's not going to make a damn difference.
Yep. No, I agree. I say this all the time about coaches in the league. John Cooper, great coach. He's had a great team.
Zen master.
Paul Maurice, great coach. Yes. He's had a great team in Florida. And so my point is not disrespecting head coaches, but if you get a pretty good team in front of you, chances are you'll become a better coach. It's just the way it is.
You're going to make a better soup with high-quality ingredients. There's no question of that. Now, you can work with mediocre ones if you're super talented, but if you have the best pieces in play, you're going to be better. There's no question.
Yeah. You said work with super talented after you just said soup, so that was pretty good. You didn't mean to do that. Let's move on.
20 minutes and 17 seconds.
That's long. That's pretty long for me. It is.
Your restraint has been admirable.
It has. I know. I know. Oh, you just wait. The horses have been unleashed. This one came as a surprise to me, and I would assume to you.
Same here.
So the Penguins, naming Dan Muse, 23rd coach in history. You talked about the age of Sturm. Muse is 42. I like this. To me, this is, and I saw this article this morning, about how Kyle Dubas, doesn't matter how many years he has left in Pittsburgh and how long it's going to be, who knows? You never know with any job, I guess, in the NHL.
Of course.
But I do believe that this is something, and it's a statement by Kyle Dubas saying, you know, we're not, again, to what you said about recycling older coaches, we're not going that route. We're going younger. We're going 42. And from what I gather, everybody has nothing but praise for Muse. I didn't know much about him, to be honest. I know he's been in the league 5 seasons with the Rangers as an assistant in Nashville too.
Yeah.
So I didn't, you know, you don't really know. It's a name, to be honest, I didn't really hear much about, but I like it. I really do. Because kind of like in Boston, same kind of thing in Pittsburgh. Let's get this thing back going.
Well, he's worked with kids a lot too, right?
Yeah.
Not in the developmental league, but also on the world stage. And he's enjoyed some success there too. But then you don't just want that. So the fact that he has worked as an assistant in Nashville with grownups, and once again with the Rangers now, what is extra promising here, he didn't get the gig, but the Rangers did interview him for the head coaching job in New York.
Yeah, yeah.
So that tells you a little bit something. They fire their head coach, but then they turn to you, what? Even though you worked for that guy, let's see what you have to say here. And they thought that was a worthwhile conversation.
Good point.
So again, I like the fresh voice. I like the fact that he's 42. And just that he's a little bit younger and it's not the same guy over and over. The 67-year-old coaches should be hired too. It's not, there's no ageism here. But this is just different. And that's what I like about it.
Let's move on. Gary Bettman again addressed the media before game one of the Cup final. It's the State of the Union. He always does this the day of, certainly the morning of game one of the final.
It's always so fascinating. It's one of my favorite interviews, pressers, whatever you want to call it. Yeah, go ahead.
It is. The CBA talks are great. The NHL is in great shape. It's moving in the right direction.
So
expansion
they tell us.
Maybe down the road. Yeah, the cap is going up, as everybody knows, incrementally the next few seasons, which is absolutely great for all these teams trying to stay competitive in the league. The one thing that still can't comes up, and the one thing that will continue to come up, is LTIR. And the whole idea of, well, if somebody's out for an extended amount of time, then you jam them back in when the Stanley Cup playoffs begin. No count against the cap. And it's like he didn't even exist on the team's payroll. So Bill Daly said a couple of weeks ago, he said that the league and the PA, they've agreed to tweak LTIR when it comes to this and how some teams have taken advantage of that. And I mean, look, it's going to come up for as long as a star player especially comes off LTIR, Vic, and then goes in and plays game
Mark Stone.
Keep
There's
going,
some
right?
pretty shining examples of
and
this.
And then what's made this even more of an issue is that when Kucherov came out, and came off, Tampa was successful. when same thing with Stone. So it's not like these
teams
were.
That's why it bothers everybody.
Yeah, it's not like these teams were knocked out in the sweep in the first round. It was, they either won the cup or they got pretty close. So where do you stand on this one?
I like how the league came out and said, seems like teams are using this a little bit more often these days.
But you know what? If it's in the CBA, which is the reasoning for this for
then
teams,
the rules,
they can use it.
Of course they can. Yeah. So this doesn't bother me as much as it bothers other people. Because again, I'm gonna go back to that. Them's the rules. Yeah. You know what the rules are. If you can use them to your advantage, if you're not using the rules to your advantage, you're not doing a good enough job.
That's
as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. Now here's the risk you run. You're Tampa Bay and you don't play Kucherov all year. Maybe you don't make the playoffs. Maybe you finish in a lower seed and you're facing tougher competition. You bring them back. This is a risk that you are going to run. Mm-hmm. It was an excellent risk, I should say, for both Vegas and Tampa Bay recently.
Well, it was fantastic.
It just doesn't really bother me that much. It probably should bother me a little bit more. My one suggestion to tweaking it is you bring in some independent medic arbitrator to look at this player sporadically to determine if they're really hurt. That to me is and that's a slippery slope.
NHLPA
is going to absolutely pee all over that. I have no shot of that ever happening. But to me, if you had some sort of independent voice, independent medical view, look at Kucherov and go, hey buddy, it's the beginning of March, you can play. Right?
Yeah. No, I know. Yeah,
but that opens up a whole can of worms. But that's the only thing that comes to my head.
Yeah. It is, as you said, if it's in the rule book and you can take advantage of it, take advantage of it. I mean, it's helped teams. It's there for a reason for teams to do that. So, it's just kind of crappy, too, that so many star players get on that. So if they were third, fourth line, they come back, that's fine. They're not going to help. You know, it's not going to be the difference why this team ends up winning the cup. But
last bit on this. Just imagine. Yeah. For 2 seconds, if the Toronto Maple Leafs in November had placed Austin Matthews for the entire season, not only does he have the time to heal, but the other pieces they may have been able to bring on board at the trade deadline.
I know.
Just imagine.
Hawkeye technology is, again, something that has been used in the National Hockey League. And on Wednesday, again, before game one of the Cup final, the league announced that they were taking another step in the expansion of this. It's a new partnership, technological partnership with Sony. And again, this whole thing is the same kind of technology that we see in tennis to determine whether the ball is in or whether it's out. And now this is what we've seen. And again, we're going to have to be looking at this for a long, long time. No pun intended with that looking thing, but we're going to have to look at this for a long time because this hopefully will continue to help officials on the ice and those in the war room look at a call that was made, either overturn it or say yes, confirmed on the ice, that is the right call, to avoid this whole, hey, we saw this replay and that was clearly in and yet you called it out. And then that's where this whole thing becomes a mess.
It's mostly going to look at offside, which has been used for already, and goals. Good goals, bad goals, that type of thing. It's not necessarily going to target judgment calls, which is still going to be a part of the game. They can't completely. There's just the physicality of hockey. It's very difficult to say, this is not determining whether a tennis ball is in or out, right? It's a bit of a different story.
Right.
I say, bring it on. The more technology, the better. Ryan, I used to be such a staunch traditionalist when it came to all sports. I want a real life umpire. I want real line judge. I want the real umpire up in the chair at Wimbledon. I want all of this. Now, those people still exist. Mm-hmm. They haven't been removed from the game. Mm-hmm. But ever since they brought in the technology in tennis, just get the call right. Yeah. And more importantly, in hockey right now, not more importantly, getting it right is the most important. Get it done quickly.
Quickly.
Let's go.
Yeah. No, I agree. Yeah, we'll see. Anyway, the more eyes, the better, because again, as Gary Bettman said, we want to get this thing right. He said we will test and test and retest and retest until
we're
comfortable.
Use all of it. Use the people.
You have to.
Use the technology. Use the cameras.
Last one. This was a really cool thing, and I saw this video the other day. Julien Brisebois of Tampa called Kucherov into his office, and it was after a skate that some of the Lightning were doing. Kucherov, again, we had D'Andre Luan not too long ago, and Kucherov already working out and having
players. He took off 15 minutes apparently, and then he was back on the ice.
I think it was 13 and a half. We'll go to Hawkeye Technology to figure out exactly that was. But so he comes in, and Julian's like, yeah, hey, look, you know what? If when you win an award, you know, we'll fly you down to with your family. I'll take care of that. This is Julian speaking. And then you either have the option of going, or we can have the award sent here. And then Kucherov was like, well, what award?
What trophy have I won?
Yeah. And then he said, well, just in case you end up winning one. And Kucherov said, yeah, okay, great. But he was like, I don't want to go anywhere. I want to stay in Tampa. That was pretty much what he was saying. So then Kucherov leaves. And as he leaves, Victor Hedman has the 10 Lindsay Award and the rest of the teammates that were practicing with him. And he was just so surprised. Then he looks back to Breezeball. I thought of it. I love seeing that part of the game because it was such a serious discussion with Breezeball and Kucherov, especially on Kucherov's point. And then when he goes out, like, okay, now I know what this is. But really deserving of getting this award.
Breezeball almost blew it, cracked me up. I know. So that's a fun part of it. Because his teammates had got together to decide to surprise him with this fact. And this was, you know, a bit of a delaying tactic by Breezeball. And again, if you win the award.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's some players that would argue Hart's great, other trophies are great, but to be awarded the MVP of the league by your peers?
I would not say no to a Hart Trophy, but if I was given the Ted Lindsay, that to me would be higher than the Hart Trophy.
Some people argue there's a little bit of politics involved with players who don't like other players. And so let's say somebody doesn't like Nathan MacKinnon, they're never going to vote for him. I think for the most part, people are sane.
Right.
And if they do believe Nathan MacKinnon is the best player, they will vote that way. So I think it is a little bit extra. And the fact that his teammates were so happy for him and wanted to make a little bit of a thing about it. And the fact that we talked about this with D'Andre Lou, the fact that his teammates all now come back to start practicing with him again. You want to talk about a real leader on this team. I know Hedman's the captain, but clearly Kucherov is a leader as well. And I think it's rather admirable.
What was the neatest part in the will end of that story when Kucherov was surprised by his teammates? He chose not to skate that day. So what they did was they put him in the sauna for about 25 minutes in the cold tub to prolong everything. And then Victor Hedman said,
so everybody could gather and get there and get organized. Yes.
Oh, I love it. Anyway, good on you. And again, I certainly would applaud anyone who wins the heart, but absolutely applaud.
He might win the heart too.
Yeah, I know.
He might.
Yeah. Okay, we're done. Enjoy game two. That again is coming up tomorrow night. And then the series shifts to Sunrise games 3 and 4. Who knows what's going to happen on Friday? Only time will tell. And we'll be back the next few days or so to break that down. Pucks and Seven, Ryan Payton, Victoria Mackich.
This has been Pucks in 7, available on the SiriusXM app and wherever you get your podcasts.